T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
That's ball 4, and it walks in a run. So Alvarez gets an easy RBI, and it's 1-0.
That was, you know, kind of just like getting better throughout the season. Walking this many batters is unacceptable. I just need to find a way to compete and throw the ball over the plate more often.
Middays on the Score.
That's Cubs starting pitcher Lucas Giolito, who came over from the Nationals and was expected to be better than he is now. Occasionally he looks terrific, but when it's coupled with his loss of velocity from his early days in the minors, when he was drafted, he was throwing 99, occasionally touching 100, right? Yep.
Tommy John for Lucas Giolito, had to rework a lot of things. And remember, the Nationals reworked his mechanics in a significant way prior to his being dealt, well, really prior to his coming up to the major leagues with the Nationals. After dealing with some velocity drop there, and then a rework in the minor leagues with the White Sox after being traded, trying to go back to the things he had done before. It's been a journey for Lucas Giolito. I mean, mechanically, right, to get to where he's a big league pitcher. Right now, though, unfortunately for Lucas, he's a big league pitcher, really, in Jersey only. The walk rate has been horrible.
He's averaging 6.8 walks per 9 innings. His expected fielder independent pitching is 7.18. If they sent Carson Fulmer down to work on stuff, they have to send this guy down. Nothing's happening here that is getting you closer to winning a World Series.
So there's two things, though. This season already, by virtue of some of Lucas's starts, by some offensive underperformance, by some of a bullpen that has torched a couple of wins for you as well, you're not making the playoffs this year. And there really wasn't a circumstance whereby the White Sox had a real good shot at a playoff anyway, although that AL Central has been weird and the Indians have just kind of been hanging around, even though they're better than that. But you know what I'm saying, Dan. I mean, that wasn't a playoff team.
Right.
You are not. There's something to be said for developing at the big leagues. There's something to be said for learning lessons. There's something to be said for failing at the big league level and learning how to bounce back from it. I just wonder at a certain point if that failure hasn't reached essentially a critical mass where you've got to come back down to rework things, to remove some pressure, to get out there and just feel, okay, this is Charlotte, and it feels different here. This is Charlotte, and I know what my assignment here is. It's a tough situation to do. For 220-some at-bats, the Cubs let Kyle Schwarber struggle, right? And determining when it was that was the right time to go back down, it's a very tough thing to do. It's a very difficult place to be. So the flip side of this is find somebody to bring up, right? The White Sox, whether through injury or through...
All right, I'm already at Michael Kopech before you finish that sentence.
I know you are.
So when is that the right thing to do?
What day are we at? May 25th?
Yep.
May 25th. It's been on the calendar that we've been out here at Gallagher Way for a Cub-Giant game. May 25th gets you pretty well past, or at least in safe distance past, the Super 2 deadline. Seven is more than six. You've already passed that issue. So now it's just it's just being honest with yourself as an organization, right? However, just in the same way that Wellington Castillo went on the PED list and is now suspended for 80 games, they're not calling up Sebby Zavala. Even though he's on the disabled list, they still wouldn't be calling him up. Zach Collins isn't coming up. That development timeline is too far. They're bringing up a 25-year-old glove, no-bat guy in Alfredo Gonzalez to come up and just be there. They can't push the development. If they've promised themselves already that they will not push the development of prospects just to take roster spaces, you can't continue to do it. The problem, you can't just start doing it now. The problem with Kopech is, what development is left? I mean, really, honestly, look at the starts, look at the breaking ball, look at the changeup, look at the success he's had both in stuff, in arsenal, and in bouncing back from some failure down there. What's left? I don't know if there's a whole lot.
Ricky Renteria, after the game last night, was asked about this possibility of demoting Lucas Giolito.
I don't foresee that at this particular time. I think he's just a young man who's got to continue to minimize the emotional aspect of crossing from preparation into the game and staying focused, relaxed, and hammer the zone with strikes. And truthfully, it's just first pitch strike and then get after the next one.
The problem is it's not there often enough. And it's the when you couple this with understanding, as you mentioned, he's reinventing himself as something other than a power pitcher, this can't happen.
Well, he's not... the reinventing yourself thing is a little different, though, because he's been pitching. I don't see anything different with him, with his stuff, with his mechanics.
I'm not saying he's James Shields.
No, he's not. And the reinvention really happened prior to last season. This is the same... I mean, by and large, this is the same Lucas that was out there and making a couple of decent starts at the end of last season. So if there's reinvention, that's news to me. And if there is, then that needs to happen in the minor leagues, apparently. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, this is the guy. This is the major league product. There's not a second, you know, coming to Jesus moment for Lucas Giolito and his mechanics and his stuff. That is what he's going to be throwing in the big leagues. There are tweaks. There's maybe a bit more aggressiveness. There's maybe some Don Cooper conversations that have definitely already happened and will continue to happen. And I get to a certain point Ricky's idea that what he is has got to happen in the big leagues, so you might as well just have him in the big leagues. You know, that clock is already running there. We've talked about it, too, with the White Sox. That if it's not, for whatever circumstances, whether it's the walks or whether it's injury or whatever, if it's not Lucas, if it's not Reynaldo Lopez, if it's not Carson Falmer, who was sent down to AAA, there is another wave of starters. Kopech, Hanson, Cease, Dunning. I mean, there's a lot of guys in there.
Cease has been unbelievable.
And Dylan Cease, I told everybody who'd listen when the season started that it sounds different. I mean, I know you hear that about hitters. You know, you go to the ballpark and you hear guys take BP. You hear guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. down in AA hitting the ball, and it just wakes you up. That sounds different. Watch Dylan Cease pitch. That sounds different. And I haven't said that much. I haven't seen that much.
This segment is brought to you by Fogo de Chão. Celebrate dad, your grad, or those closest to you with the fresh flavors of weekend Brazilian brunch now at Fogo de Chão in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're your midday show on The Score. We are on from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and we are currently on at lovely Gallagher Way. Here we are shaded by a tent, but most people are sun-dappled in front of us here, enjoying themselves. Now, the folks here bring out these Budweiser-sponsored lawn games. You don't have to bring your own. They have them here for you.
It's not a BYO lawn game
situation. No, they have giant Connect Four board that an adorable little girl with a pink sun hat has decided to tip the boards over and is placing the Connect Four, whatever you would
pucks.
Call them. I don't know. Yeah, at this stage, they're not checkers because it's larger than that, but they would look like discs of some kind that she's just sliding them in from the bottom and having fun and making up her own version of the game. Other toddlers are playing their version of horseshoes. There's giant Jenga set up here, and if you hear that familiar thud in the background of a bag of corn being thrown against plywood, yes, that's happening too.
There is a fountain out here as well. And, Dan, that fountain was not working the last two times we were out here, you know, because it was 45 degrees and would have been icicles instead. But they've turned that off. I don't know if it comes – like, there's a number of toddlers that have to be at the park for them to actually – okay, that's too many toddlers.
There's like a critical mass.
We understand the burden that we are putting on parents by letting all these children run around just soaking wet, that they have to turn it off. But I think we've reached that point.
Kids don't care.
No, they don't.
They don't care. And the one thing that I remember, it's been a long, long time, but if you have a toddler in a diaper or a pull-up and they run into a fountain, that you know, then you can't tell, all right, does the diaper need changing? Because the diaper immediately, all of the newfangled, the foam in there that starts to soak everything up, your toddler will weigh 37 pounds. And you're like, what the hell? Oh, you ran into the fountain again. So my advice, if you are bringing small children here, that bring extra pull-ups because you're probably going to need them. But the overall level of cute that is going on out there with those kids making up their versions of horseshoes is pretty high right now.
It really makes up for the three of you over there.
Yes.
Well, close. It's close. It's still pretty ugly.
We're
over
hidden.
Here.
You can't really see us. They're out there for everybody to see. But this is it's a pretty special place to bring kids. I don't even think they have any idea that they're right near an iconic baseball cathedral. I don't think they care.
Would they care? No. The point of them being here at a certain degree is the parents get to bring them into the park at some point. They have the picture, and then it's, look, you were at Wrigley Field since the day you were born, right? I mean, those pictures need to be taken. I've got pictures of both ballparks down at Comiskey right before it went away. And I was a little toddler, probably 87, something mm-hmm. like that. And then pictures here, too. I mean, that's just so my dad can tell the story.
My parents didn't bother.
Really?
Taking the pictures. Nope. It was.
They didn't make you push a lawnmower around either.
Nope. Not at that age. First game was Wrigley's, second game was at Old Comiskey. The very first game I went to at Comiskey was in 76 or 77. I think it was 77 because I remember it was Alan Bannister at shortstop. I remember Alan Bannister let two balls go through his legs, and it made me feel better about myself.
So something I was thinking about last night, too, and it connected to the baseball being different the last 2.5 years. And also to a new strategy, well, not new strategy, but a strategy the Rays have kind of gotten some publicity for in starting Sergio Romo a couple of times. It sounds like they're going to do it again over the weekend. Does that do anything for you in terms of legacy? And I mean that from a stats standpoint. I mean that from a Hall of Fame standpoint. Does it do anything for you in terms of changing the roles of players themselves? Because when you start to compare, and that's the cool part about wins above replacement, it's the cool part about all these the ERA pluses and all the historical adjusting stats that we've got, you get to compare Stan Musial to Marcell Ozuna, right? You get to do the comparison between Chris Bryant and Ron Santo. You get to do all that stuff. And now, once you really start changing the era that we live in, and that's why I asked Alan Nathan about it, that, you know, the difference between this ball and the dead ball era, this ball and, you know, the 1960s, this ball and anything from 1968 to the beginning of the 80s. You know,
yeah,
I think
see,
that's kind of where things are
that's
cut up.
That's more a Jay Jaffe question, I think, than it is an Alan Nathan question.
Well, but is it for you different? Because now we're going to start to change, if we start to change what these pitchers are being asked to do, this is the whole argument against or about closers and Trevor Hoffman versus Mariano Rivera versus, you know, Rob Nen, you know, like guys who did it at a historic level versus guys who were just really great for their era doing a job that didn't get a whole lot of respect for the first handful of years that job was put into the big leagues.
It seems to me that it's always, do you take the next step? It's very easy to look at somebody and then say, well, wait, which pitchers were serving in World War II when this guy was doing that, and who was actually playing in the league? To me, it's always that idea of we throw out stats and we take a first blush, and sometimes it's just the extra effort to determine why the numbers were what they were. When we start looking at pitchers from 1968, for example, and you say, well, Bob Gibson did this. It was
Denny McClain won 30-some
sure,
games.
Yeah, it's what you did, and they made adjustments accordingly. The answer is it doesn't have to be perfect. We should get it as close as we should, and then all you can be is what you are when you play.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
All you can ask a player to do is to be the best that he can be in the environment when he arrives. And baseball is, I wouldn't argue this necessarily better right now. I think the athletes are better. But it's breaking a little bit. The baseball doing what it's doing, coupled with an uptick in pitching velocity, is the changes have accelerated. That's the thing. It used to be slower. Unless you lower the mound or raise the mound or change distances, unless you do something the way football does things, where all of a sudden you wake up and it's Deus Ex Machina.
But that's the issue with the baseball, is that, you know, yes, there's been a revolution in launch angle and there's been a ton more velocity, but we've seen strikeouts tick up over time. Yeah, it feels fast because of how quickly they've all gone up. and it feels fast because of how many guys, maybe more so because of how many guys throw 95. But we don't know whether the home run ratio, whether the three true outcome hitter, whether all that stuff that's happened over the last 2 years would have happened this fast. I mean, that was Alan Nathan's whole point is, yeah, we understand that it's the aerodynamics of the baseball. We can't even figure out what the hell's changed within the aerodynamics of it.
We've got an angry 815er here I need to address. This angry 815er says, Dan, you called it an iconic cathedral for years. You made it clear Wrigley was a dump. Which is it?
Well, you going to come clean on that?
Well, here's the thing. Maybe you haven't noticed. They've invested a little bit in upkeep around here.
A lot.
If you haven't been here in a while, a couple of dollars might have been put into.
So your threshold between dump and iconic cathedral is really just is concrete falling on your head.
Is
that's all you need to do for Dan. Stop the concrete from falling on people's heads, and you're willing to change the classification of a ballpark.
Yeah, right. I think, and the whole, you know, using a mop every once in a while, maybe.
Should call the folks at the Oakland Coliseum and just let them know that you're willing to change their qualification of a ballpark as soon as the concrete stops falling on the beat writers.
And maybe an occasional power washing, you know, having worked here. This was a long-standing workplace during summers for me, others who covered this team as reporters, and they came by it honestly to describe it as it was. Well, they did some upkeep around here.
There's two elevators now, and both of them work.
Yeah, and the point that you're making about eras and what some of this means, the 515 says it's the Hal Newhouser quotient. Well, it's Hal Newhouser, I believe, back-to-back MVPs, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay.
At a time when you had everything was watered down, yet his name comes up on that list of back-to-back MVPs, and you say, well, look what he did. Okay, well, it was. You have to understand why. How about the whole no players of color in the league for a long, long time?
Problem.
When we talked about the grand game that it was and back in the glory era, well, they weren't playing against the best on the planet at that time. It's all of it. But I think Alan Nathan's point was you can't do it while you're in it. And that's what baseball's trying to do now. That's what Sheehan and Rob Arthur and everything, they're trying to let us know and set off alarm bells telling everybody, look, we're in some sort of bubble time here.
I guess I'm willing to concede that if you're the best there is at the job you're being asked to do, then you have been elevated to a certain point. You know, then you are maybe even a Hall of Famer. But the way we elect our Hall of Famers, too, is so goofy and so weird that even if you are of that level, which you take, for instance, Ron Santo, a guy who could arguably be left out of the Hall of Fame just as well. I think Ron Santo is a perfect case for the border, for the line itself. But he plays third base. He plays in an era where that kind of production was elite, especially for that position. The position itself is rarely in the Hall of Fame. I think it's an interesting way to look at those eras and to apply the actual, you know, equipment that you're using to an era itself.
We're going to have Ron Coomer joining us here on Gallagher Way in just a bit. I have a question for you. By wins above replacement, who do you think is the best team in baseball?
By cumulative wins above replacement?
Aggregate wins above replacement of their players. I want you to picture in your mind who you think right now is baseball's best team by that measure. And then I'll let you know.
All right.
You have the Bernstein and McKnight Show and The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Hanley Ramirez has been DFA'd, designated for assignment, by the Red Sox, and it does not look like it is a particularly tantalizing trade possibility looking at the economics of it. So it's very likely he is going to find himself as a free agent that is available for anybody who wants to inherit some of that stuff.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of a market for a free agent first base DH, maybe third base guy with an 88 weighted runs created.
Yep.
Although Jose Bautista's had two jobs in the last 3 weeks, so I don't know. Maybe there is that market.
I had asked you this question as we went to break. What team in baseball has the highest aggregate WAR number, total wins above replacement?
My first blush answer would have been the Red Sox, but now that Hanley Ramirez has been designated and we did a deeper dive into those numbers, I worry.
You just stick with your first.
Red Sox.
No, Red Sox are sixth.
Damn.
At 8.6.
I figured Mookie
total.
Betts was just giving him a hole. Well, okay, then my second game, I'm going to stick in the American League.
Houston is seventh at 8.5.
Is it the Angels?
The Angels, no.
Really? I just figured Mike Trout.
I gotta scroll down.
Shohei
here.
Ohtani. You gotta scroll? Oh God! I gave you an answer that you have to scroll for.
Oh yeah, no. Excuse me.
Embarrassing.
No, 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 no. The Angels are fourth.
Oh, Yankees. Okay.
You didn't have
good.
To scroll. What the
you're
hell
good.
Are you doing?
No, I missed. The,
okay.
The Yankees are second at 10.9. Angels are 8.9.
Wow. Not the Braves.
Not the Braves.
The Braves are third.
What?
Third at 10.
Who are we missing? Who are we missing? Cubs? You're
number one.
Wow.
No kidding. Aggregate wins above replacement.
And I bring this up for a reason after an update. The Cubs are at 11.5 wins above replacement. They are more than half a win better than the Yankees, who are second at 10.9. And, you know, going inside some of this, too, when you start looking at where this is all coming from, the Cubs are the second best team in offensive runs above average. The Yankees are an insane 46.1 runs, offensive runs above average, but the Yankees are below average defensively at negative 1.7. And if you just look at defense, the Cubs are also the number two defensive team in baseball. So number two in both places them number one overall. And it also, we were talking about run differential a little bit before the show. Excuse me, it's the Diamondbacks are number one. No, that's right. Diamondbacks number one in defense, but they have their offense is awful. And the Cubs are second, just barely second in defensive runs. And that's where you get that. There's something, but this underpins this idea of run differential and Pythagorean record and what some of that says about what's being made of run differential.
So how good are the Cubs really when we come
that's
back from
right.
the update?
Cubby. The Cubs' record is 25-21. The Cubs have scored 238 runs. They have allowed 176 runs. Baseball, in its simplest way of understanding it, is just that game. It is scoring runs. It is preventing runs. You prevent runs by pitching. You prevent runs by defending. You score runs by hitting. You score runs by base running. Right?
Yeah, it seems to check
that's
out.
That's pretty much it. So there's something called Pythagorean record that is a Bill James discovered statistic that simply enough uses your run differential to give an idea of what your record should be simply based on that. The Cubs' Pythagorean record based on their run differential is 29-17. That's a full four in either direction. If you add four to the wins, subtract four to the losses, 29-17 is what their record should be. Now, some say, well, wait a second, that means the manager sucks because he's not getting the most out of the run differential. No, again, you have to balance that against what you're seeing and figure out what it actually means beyond that.
It used to be used, Pythagorean, as credit or debit to the manager. It used to be used as almost like direct correlation. And I, you know, through a couple of different things, I've kind of changed my outlook on that some. But I understand that you... You know, when you go through the constituent elements of what makes up the Cubs' collective WAR, what makes up their run differential, and what makes up the offense, and some, it's not out of line to say that yes, the underlying stats are what they are, and the overall production has been something solid and worth noting here. But do you really feel as though the sum of those parts have added up? You know what I'm saying? Like, are they really underperforming or overperforming at this point? What that gives me more so than checking the eye test against results, it gives me more so confidence that this team is what it's supposed to be.
They're fine.
That they should be fine down the line. Because, listen, you've had blow-ups by Tyler Chatwood. You've had issues from Yu Darvish. You've had Anthony Rizzo not hitting for a while. You're not, if you're listening to these numbers and you're still upset with the Cubs' start and you want, you know, 30 wins or whatever it happens to be, that's okay. I'm not telling you, we can't tell you that what you saw wasn't what you saw. Just telling you that what you can trust in are numbers like this. What you can trust in are the general predictive nature of these sorts of numbers.
The larger picture. Where do you think the Cubs are defensively in defensive runs above average? Where do you think they rank in baseball?
We talked last week about just how good Kyle Schwarber rates out from some of the zone ratings.
Yeah, we're hoping to have a conversation with him after batting practice, by the way.
And he will be covering plenty of zone in left field while he does it. So, that, you know, maybe an out-of-breath Kyle Schwarber, but talk to him nonetheless. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that defensively, they're a top-five club.
They're third.
Yeah.
They are third in defensive runs above average. The Diamondbacks have just been picking everything. They're at 18.4.
They can't hit.
The Brewers at 17.2, and the Cubs are at 16.
It's defensive fielding runs? Are you looking into... Because the Cubs have had some issues in framing. Defensively, behind the plate.
That's a really good question as to whether or not the Fangraphs number uses framing. I don't know if it does or not.
I know the Baseball Reference or Baseball Prospectus has been so, facing forward on defensive catcher framing, but I don't know whether Fangraphs tags that in or not. Either way, what it does, what these numbers do, we're not. It tells you that you should have faith in this club going forward because of the talent and not only that, it's really just checking things out from last season and the season before. It's saying that there aren't really underlying gigantic issues other than just, you know, baseball being baseball, players underperforming. There is a solid core in this team that should be able to support it going forward. And that's what we've seen the last 3-4 years.
That's my takeaway in the overall, is that people say, well, it's all, again, you're piling up runs against bad teams.
That's what baseball is.
It's a baseball is, and that ultimately the takeaway for me is they're probably fine, and a lot of this is just noise and not signal.
Stay healthy, and some of the things will fix themselves.
This segment brought to you by Burlington. It is the summer of savings at your Burlington store. Hurry in for the very best brand name dresses, shorts, tanks, tees, sandals, and swimsuits for the family. Burlington style for everyone. Looking forward to talking to Ron Coomer. He's planning on stopping by. Looking forward to talking to Kyle Schwarber. He's told David Schuster that after batting practice, he's going to jump on with us. We could talk about his how he's suddenly become, I don't know, a plus left fielder.
Top tier left fielder. Top tier guy.
Is that true?
Top man.
That is Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. All that coming your way, including the fun stuff we always bring you at 11 on the Midday Midway on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment's brought to you by Burlington. It's the summer of savings at your Burlington store. Hurry in for the very best brand name dresses, shorts, tanks, tees, sandals, and swimsuits for the family. Burlington style for everyone. And guess what else it is right now? It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is food. Text food to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is food to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
As we await the arrival of Ron Coomer, who's supposed to be on the show pretty quickly here, and Kyle Schwarber, who will be on a little bit later this morning, I have a Cub lineup for you. Can I give you a Cubs lineup?
I would like one.
Ben Zobrist will lead off in right field. Albert Almora, Joe's done a little bit of this, but Albert Almora is in center field, batting two. Chris Bryant at third, batting three. Anthony Rizzo at first base. Wilson Contreras will catch. Javier Baez at second base. Ian Happ is in left field. Addison Russell is at short. And Kyle Hendricks, of course, has the start today against the Giants.
Kyle Schwarber, indeed, based on defensive runs above average. I'm not going to. There's UZR. There's UZR 150. But among all left fielders right now, and this is, it's a little bit surprising that Giancarlo Stanton is far and away the best defensive left fielder by a mile.
By what metric?
If you're looking at UZR, excuse me, I'm looking at defensive runs above average. He's at 3.9. What is just DEF? This is the final conclusive stat on Fangraphs. Corey Dickerson of Pittsburgh is second at 2.5. He was on another list that you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, he was on the top guy in left field and outs above average. He was a plus +4 this season.
The Yankees, Brett Gardner.
I'm always making
at 2.2. And then Kyle Schwarber. Kyle Schwarber at 1.8 has been a good left fielder. And our guy Scott from Davenport actually plotted out offensive runs and defensive runs, and Kyle Schwarber is arguably maybe the second best left fielder. Looking at that,
I don't know. I truthfully and honestly do not know, and am not smart enough to know what matters as far as zone stats go this early in the season.
Right.
I don't know what to do with those with a sample size that's less than a full season, an entire season. And indeed, there are some people that would say, hell, Joe Maddon's one of them. We were talking with him 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, about zone stats, the UZR stuff, the zone ratings, and he's not a real big fan of them either. They have specific limitations. They don't take necessarily into account where a fielder might set up in the shift and how they might position differently one way or the other. Those are tougher than the defensive metrics in general. Are tougher than what you're dealing with in a WAR or offensive stats. It's just they're different. There's so many more variables.
You're going to have to help me with this texter from in the 630 who texts the Bernstein and McKnight show to say, if the Cubs do not make the playoffs this year, with next year being Joe Maddon's contract year, do you see him being reassigned? They would have to pay him more than the $6 million he's already getting. What is going on here? I spent all morning listening to Fire Joe Maddon phone calls. What are we doing here?
I'll tell you what I think it is. What is this?
You
have a core of players that are all within the 24 to 28 range. And as much as Cubs fans might be frustrated with Javi Baez at times or Addison Russell at times or even Anthony Rizzo at times, you're locked. We said this when we talked with Theo like a month ago. The team's on the field. You're not changing the players. I think even in the deepest, darkest fantasies of Cubs fans, they understand that you're not trading Kyle Schwarber just to send a message, that you're not moving Addison Russell just because he's, I don't know, infuriating to you. I don't know. I don't know the answer to those things. But you understand that core is that core because they've committed to that kind of money, right? You've committed to young, controllable players so that you can sign things around the edges. So what's left, right? What's left for you to change?
Is that the only possible moving part? Is why people, a frustrated fan, is just being trying to be dumb? I mean, this is, I guess on some other level, I'm just really bothered that we're still there. We have done so many, the Cubs have done so much, and this whole regime, and just in general as sports fans, we should be smarter than that. And I guess I've got, you know, I think as a station we have a responsibility to not necessarily give voice to some of that stupidity.
What has surprised me...
I read the text, but it just...
Yeah,
it's,
I mean, what has surprised me is, and I don't mean this necessarily in a good way, but I really figured that winning a World Series would give a pass to everything for a long time. More than two seasons. And I'm not even saying that fans would become uncritical of the team or completely just, you know, bucolic in nature. I really thought that this would just, it would be a decade-long honeymoon. I really did. And I'm not even saying that was a good thing. I'm not even saying that I support fans getting rid of baseball sensibilities or excusing any kind of behavior one way or the other or production on the field. I thought we were in for a lot longer honeymoon than that. And it's surprising to me that there hasn't been that. It really is.
This is Buddy in Peoria on the Score. Hi, Buddy.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Fine.
It's absolutely the same experience down here in lovely Central Illinois. I'm just getting pummeled with lifelong Cub fans who have just become spoiled and impossible to listen to. Every time they lose, they want to fire Joe Maddon or trade Anthony Rizzo. It's insane.
Spoiled.
So I'm not surprised
that's not
to hear
spoiled, buddy. That's not spoiled. That's dumb. It's not spoiled is one thing, and holding
there's no
the team
doubt
having
about
high
that.
Expectations.
Yeah.
But in you're it's May and you've been to three straight NLCSs and you won a World Series. It's not spoiled. They should the expectation should be high, but it's just it's being actively dumb on purpose.
These aren't. I mean, look at the guys in orange here at Gallagher Way, right? Giants fans. You know what the Giants went through last season? You had a core of players who all aged a little bit too far. You had an injury to Madison Bumgarner that was much too much to overcome. You had some free agents that, in Jeff Samardzija and Johnny Cueto, either got dinged up or did not perform well. This is not that. This is not that. I mean, very clearly, that's an organization, the Giants, that have won plenty of World Series in the last decade. That has grown a young core in Brandon Crawford and in Buster Posey that and others, 100 Pence among them, that clearly they built around and clearly they assembled. But as you age out and as you start to lose some of the shine around those players, it becomes something different. I think Giants fans see the process a little bit differently than they did a couple of years ago. This Cubs core is not that Giants core of last year.
I will never understand why at the end of May, when we were just looking at the run differential numbers, et cetera, and starting to look at the, you know, aggregate wins above replacement, the Cubs most likely are fine. That's the conclusion to take away here, that every single expert, whose job it is to have opinions about such things, everybody believes, as they did last year. I remember Parkins saying it when the Cubs were 45-45 mm-hmm. and looking at a five-game deficit in the division, and I remember Parkins saying, if anybody is selling the Cubs, I'm buying. And anywhere in that market that at this, you get him in at a decent market price right there. And that's what everybody was saying. And indeed, it took a while. And then in August, they took off and everything ended up fine, because over 162, it's usually, outside of injury, pretty easy to determine who's good and who's not.
Outside of injury and perhaps bullpen overusage. Those are the two things I worry about most, really, in any given season when the expectations are where they are. And as long as, you know, some starters get a little longer into games, as long as you've got a Kyle Hendricks and John Lester pitching the way that they've pitched lately, things start to tick back up for them. They really ought to.
They're expected to, because we know how good the players are. It's just our level
track record.
Our level of uncertainty for some of this stuff has dropped off. Now, again, baseball is variance. Nothing is guaranteed as far as the playoffs go. And we're not going to say, well, this automatically means they're going to reach this level of the playoffs or win a World Series, or because that means nothing. What you know is over 162. And the Cubs are still a 90-some win team.
Nearly to the midday midway here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We have a couple of things to tease, and also awaiting appearances from Ron Coomer and Kyle Schwarber and perhaps others who are here at the ballpark. We're just outside Gallagher Way. We're in Gallagher Way, in fact, hanging out on a beautiful, beautiful Friday. What do you got coming up on the midday midway?
I have the harrowing details of the Richie Incognito incident that may explain a lot about his erratic behavior over the last few weeks, and shine a light on something that is often stigmatized and should not be. There is also a sport in this country whose governing body needs to be shut down.
I have a tennis legend who also probably needed to be shut down a little earlier in the night than he was, and a story from Scotland. That's a pretty crazy story. Maybe it'll change what you believe in here in this world.
Okay, and if we have time for it, I have a movie that is said to be in the works that is wheelhouse for the Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I am
that is
nervous.
Coming up, the midday midway next. Keep it here. You got the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.